214-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Mainly gray skies. We've had a couple of bright moments thus far during the first half of the day today. But any appearances by the sun have been few and far between and very brief. In fact, right now we're getting a few more flurries here in the Butler area. So, and we can expect that. In fact, some snow showers expected on again, off again later today, tonight, and tomorrow as it remains very winter-like. And I guess, rightly so, we're in the last week of winter now. Yep, first day of spring is a week from today, next Tuesday. And we'll look forward to that, will we not? Open talk to begin the program today. We'll have guests later. We're going to be chatting later today with Kathy Emmons. Kathy will be the main speaker at the upcoming Good Friday Breakfast, hosted each year by the Butler County YMCA. They've been doing this for, oh gosh, I think almost 70 years, I believe. So we'll chat with her. Latest in a long line of distinguished speakers for this very popular family event. Also today, we'll be chatting with students from Butler Senior High School, who this weekend will raise the curtain on the spring musical at Butler High, which is The Little Mermaid. So we'll find out about that, talk to some of those students later on the program today. But first off, it's Open Talk. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. Just a reminder, tomorrow is the day that we'll be doing our annual Antiques Roadshow, not on TV, but here on the radio. This in advance of the GFWC Intermediate League Antique Show and Sale, which is coming up this weekend at Tanglewood. And we'll have some representatives from the Intermediate League with us tomorrow. Judy Nye, Annabelle Brunemer, and we'll also be joined once again by well-known antiques dealer Ellen King, who will be taking your calls if you have questions about items you've got around the house that you think might be antiques or might be of some value. So it's always fun, it's always popular, and it's really, really amazing to listen to Ellen King give you some quick appraisals on some of these items. So that'll be tomorrow, and we'll do that right at the start of the program tomorrow at 12:30. Open talk right now. I want to tell you, we mentioned yesterday soapbox derbies that used to be held in Butler, and that led to a whole slew of calls from people indicating where they had run soapbox derbies. It all started because the initial source that I saw, and it was a picture on Facebook, said the soapbox derbies were held on East Jefferson Street, and I immediately thought, coming down East Jefferson Street Hill, as if you were coming from Shakora into Butler. And my thought was, boy, it's an awful steep hill to come down in a homemade orange crate derby. Well, it turns out they may have been going the other way. They may have been going on Jefferson Street, but from up around the Covenant Presbyterian Church down toward Monroe Street, down toward where Snack and Pack is now located. So anyway, and even after the program today, we had many calls on it yesterday. Even after the program, I had some emails from folks. And we thank you, Tom Rossman, who said he had found a picture of one of the soapbox derbies in the fantastic book, Pictorial History of Butler, by Stephen Pozar and Gene Purvis. And indeed, there is a picture in there of the Orange Crate Derby, which was held as part of a three-day sesquicentennial celebration here in Butler. And there's a picture, and it says the race course ran from Franklin Street to Monroe on East Jeff. So in other words, that would be from the Covenant Presbyterian down that hill. It's a much less steep hill than coming the other direction, coming in from Shakora. It'd still be going at a pretty good clip, I think, by the time you got to Monroe Street in one of those homemade vehicles. And in the picture, which is in the Pictorial History of Butler by Gene Purvis and Steve Pozar, you can see the spire of Covenant Church in the background, and you can see a couple of the Orange Crate Soapbox Derby vehicles coming down the road. One thing of interest, you can also see, and if you were coming down that hill, heading out of town toward Chicora, on your left-hand side would have been Osterling's Feed Store. When I first looked at that, I was really discombobulated because, you know, Osterling's is down on the corner of Monroe and Jeff, further down the street. Well, it moved there later. I didn't know that. The original P.J. Osterling's was further up toward the downtown on East Jefferson Street, and then moved at some point later down to the corner of Monroe and Jefferson and Gatanning Street, right at that complex intersection there at the bottom of the hill. And, of course, what, about, 12 years ago, they built a brand-new building. Well, that would be about 12 years, wouldn't it, I think? Yeah, they had a really, really old building that they tore down and built a new one. So, anyway, it's always interesting. There was another picture, and this, again, came from another listener who said, take a look at the Butler, Pennsylvania blog, which is just a wonderful compendium of local information and tidbits that has been published for many years by Charles Singolani, a former Butler resident who's lived in Germany for many, many years now, many decades, as a matter of fact. And yes, indeed, one of his blogs on the on his website was on the Soapbox Derbies. And there was a picture. Now, I'm not sure where exactly this picture was located. Maybe somebody can help me here. There's one thing in the background. Well, there's two things that I can see in the background of stores. One is called Goma's Food Market. And I have no idea whether I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's G-O-M-E-S. Goma's or Gomes. Goma's Food Market. Anybody remember that or know where it was? And then there's also, I can see one other sign that says Hindman Moving and Storage. Now, we know that name around here, but exactly where it was located whenever this picture was taken, I do not know. I do not know. Could it still have been East Jefferson Street? Was there a place called Gomez Food Market or Gomes Food Market on East Jefferson Street? I'm not sure. There were some people who left messages on Charles Singolani's website. One indicated that it was probably in the 1940s along East Jefferson Street. I do not know. I do not know. There was another blogger who said that they had watched the Soapbox Derby on Main Street. On Main Street. Standing in front of the Howard Johnson's restaurant sometime in the 1950s. Now, there was a Howard Johnson's restaurant, and it certainly was on Main Street. It was near the bottom of North Main Street Hill. It's now a parking lot between the Armstrong Building and the B'nai Abraham Synagogue. That parking lot site used to be a Howard Johnson's. And another blogger said in the 1950s, the mid to late 1950s, the Derby was run down North Main Street Hill. A friend of mine won and got a trip to the Nationals in Ohio. One problem was with this course that they used the lanes of the highway and they were slightly different in slope. If you drew the fast lane, you were home free. Also, you needed to make your Derby car as heavy as the rules allowed. And, of course, the more weight, I guess, faster it would go, right? Coming down the hill. All sorts of regulations for that. Now, the picture that Charles Singolani has on his website, the Butler, Pennsylvania blog. By the way, if you've never looked at this, it's fascinating. And you can read it for a long time because he's posted a lot of things over the years. But anyway, the picture that he has for this, these are pretty substantial vehicles. I mean, the other pictures that I've seen in the Gene Purvis and Stephen Pozar book, they were, you know, classic orange crate put together derby cars. These look more like Indy cars. I mean, obviously they're, you know, I don't know, wood, I suppose, maybe cardboard, probably wood, plywood. But they're, it's not a box shaped like an orange crate. These are, you know, have a pointed nose and drivers, the kids that are driving them are all hunched down like they were in an Indy car. In fact, you can even read the names on the side of the vehicles. One driver in this particular photograph was Joe Archer, and another one was Charles Wilson, it looks like. The last name is a little bit blurry in that, but what a great picture. And again, if anybody knows where there was a Gomez Market, Gomes Market, G-O-M-E-S, Gomez Market, food market, let me know, because that would identify where this photograph was taken. There's a big tree also in the background, but mainly it's just a storefront that says Gomez Food Market, and then beside it a sign that says Hindman Moving Storage. Not able to place it myself. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. I never rode in a soapbox derby car, never built one. I suppose it would have been great fun when you were 7 or 8 or 9 years old. Seemed to be mostly a guy thing at that time, and this was decades ago, of course. I haven't seen any pictures, at least, of girls in them, but who knows? Oh, one other blogger said that they remembered the Soapbox Derby being sponsored by the Optimist Club. The Optimist Club. I don't think that exists anymore, does it? 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Let's go to the people. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave.
Hi.
I don't have answers to any of that, but I was watching Jeopardy Friday, and they had a category, and I thought it was Jeepology with a G.
Uh-huh.
But here it was Jeepology. And here they gave credit to Willys as being the inventor of the Jeep on Jeopardy.
That's incorrect.
Did anybody catch that in your listening audience? Because I was, you know, and part of the pun was, you know, this company gave the allies the Willys. So where they got their information from, and I looked up on Wikipedia, I mean, I know it's Butler.
Yeah, well, there's. Right. I'll tell you where the confusion comes from, and it's surprising to see that on Jeopardy. It's an amazing coincidence. I was watching TV within the past several weeks. It was not Jeopardy. It was something else. And I saw the same thing, where, you know, the invention of the Jeep, the first Jeeps were credited to Willys. Here's the deal. The Jeep was invented in Butler. The prototype was built here. By the Bantam Car Company, which was in very poor financial shape at the time. They did not have either the funds nor the production facilities to make as many as the Army wanted, because the Army wanted gazillions of these things.
Yeah, like tens of thousands.
Yeah, yeah, and they just couldn't do it. I mean, it was a small car plant here in Butler. They ended up making the trailers for the Jeeps. They built those at the Bantam plant here in Butler, but the contract to build, to mass produce them, went to Willys. However,
and,
Willys,
you know,
did not invent them. You know, they didn't build the prototype. They didn't build
right.
The first one.
That's all true.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny because I was watching PBS a couple months ago, and they had like Globe Trekker or something, and they were in the Midwest. I think it was Toledo. Is that where Willys was at, I believe?
Don't know.
Anyhow, the guy comes out. He's like, yep, this is like where they built the first Jeeps. And he's in a Jeep, and they go for a ride. And I'm like, that's not true.
I bet that's what I saw on PBS. Okay. I can't remember, but I know it was in Jeopardy. But I did the same thing you did. I popped up out of my chair and said, well, that's not right.
I mean, it was definitely a Jeep, but, you know, it was, yeah, the guy was claiming it was the first. You know, they made it, and the girls driving, they were driving around the backcountry roads or something, and... So I was just surprised that was the right answer, supposedly the right answer on Jeopardy, because I thought they vetted that very closely.
We're going to have to call Alex Trebek and you know, tell him to get on the stick here.
I think there should be a groundswell of indignation here.
I think we should have a congressional investigation.
I'm right behind you, Dave. I just want to know if anybody else caught that, because I talked to some people on Facebook and they were like, "Oh yeah, that's." I saw that too, so.
Thanks, my friend.
All right. Have a good afternoon.
And you. Bye-bye. 283-2525 is our number. Let's go to this line next. Caller, I know you've been waiting. Thanks very much for your patience. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Dave, two things.
Yeah.
They did invent the Jeep here in Butler. They also made 1,500 of them, and they went to Russia.
Wow, I never knew that.
Yeah, that was something I picked up years ago.
Wow.
The other thing is, if you have your copy of A Pound of Jumbo and a Loaf of Bread there, the book that was written here in Butler, there is a Gomes Food Market, 247 East Jefferson Street.
Uh-huh. So that answers that question, huh?
Nah, according to this book. Mm-hmm. And I think that lady did her research.
Yeah. I have a copy, but I don't have it with me here in the studio. So, 247 East Jeff. So that would have been
G-O-M-E-S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's the same spot. I've got the picture of it right here on the Charles Colson, the Butler, Pennsylvania blog. But I just couldn't identify where it was. Well, that jives with the other information we've had that these races were held on East Jefferson Street,
mm-hmm.
from Franklin down to Monroe. Appreciate that, my friend, and I didn't
think about
looking in A Pound of Jumbo. I should have thought of that.
a handy reference.
It
we
is
keep
indeed.
It on the, we keep it handy because we need it every now and then.
It's a fun book, too. Thanks a lot, my friend. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
283-2525 is our number. It's Open Talk, 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Oh, hi, Dave.
Hiya.
Really enjoy your show.
Oh, thanks for that.
I just wanted to, the caller that called in about Jeopardy, mm-hmm. My sister and I were watching it, too, and I said, hey, that's a wrong answer. I said, how do we get a hold of them?
I don't know.
Well, and where the Jeep was built, you know?
They have a panel of judges. I don't watch Jeopardy a lot.
Yeah, I don't know who makes up their questions or whatever they are.
I see it occasionally, but and I've seen it on occasion where, you know, somebody will give an answer and Alex Trebek will say, judges? And
apparently yeah, right.
These people that are off camera give them either the thumbs up or the thumbs down. But
I just wanted to let that gentleman know. I heard that, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was not alone then, huh?
No, he was not alone.
Well, I think we ought to start a campaign to call Alex Trebek on the carpet.
I think we should.
And say, let's get it right here, Jocko. What do you think?
Okay, Dave. Well, hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And we sure enjoy you every day.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thanks
Bye-bye.
Again.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Alex, I wonder if Alex Trebek is, you know, really smart. I bet he is. I mean, obviously, he's got the answers on his card there, right? So, I mean, he doesn't necessarily know all the answers, but he appears to be a pretty smart cookie, doesn't he? Of course, having the answers on the card doesn't always mean you're going to read it right. Who was the guy who read the wrong name on the, I don't know, the Miss Universe or the Miss World or something pageant last year? Yeah, it's the guy that hosts the Family Feud now. I can't think of his name. It doesn't always guarantee you're going to read the right thing. Alex Trebek, how long has he been doing Jeopardy? My goodness, decades, huh? That's got to be one of the longest-running quiz shows. Maybe it is the longest-running quiz show of all time. I'm not sure. The concept, the brainchild of Merv Griffin, I believe, who was much more than just a TV talk show host, although that's how I first came across him. He was a producer and obviously a pretty smart guy. I think he was the brainchild behind Wheel of Fortune, too, I believe. I'm not sure. The late Merv Griffin. Well, anyway, let's start a campaign. Get a hold of Alex Trebek and see if we can get some kind of a, you know, an on-screen apology. And then I suppose we'll have to take some money away from whoever won it that day. If they indeed answered Willie's. Instead of the Bantam Car Company in Butler, PA. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. Somebody else asked, when did they stop having the Soapbox Derby? I do not know. Obviously, they were still doing it at least into the late 50s due to a couple of dated pictures that we've seen. I have not seen a date on the picture in the Gene Purvis Stephen Posar book. That was the Butler sesquicentennial, so we could figure that out, I guess. But I don't know off the top of my head the exact year for the founding of the city of Butler. So, and I have a copy of the pictorial history of Butler. I just don't have it with me here in the studio right now. So I don't know. They were holding them at least into the late 1950s, maybe even into the 60s. According to one blogger, sponsored initially by the Optimist Club in Butler, which is another club. I don't know. They're not still around, are they? Optimist Club? I don't think so. 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525, open talk on this first portion of the program today. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
You were talking about the North Main Street Derby.
Yes,
that the Boy Scouts had.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my two young brothers being, I was married then, and they it would be in the 50s. My dad, he and the boys, they built each one a derby, and they sat in them and rode down that hill.
Mm. So that was on North Main Street Hill, huh?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember both of those. Then it got when my grandsons were in the Boy Scouts, and they have these little racetracks inside the building,
mm-hmm.
and the boys build the little cars, and that's how they race them now. I don't know right now, but that was here probably a few years back.
I think they may still do that, and I got a little mixed up when I was first talking about it too, because I mixed the two together. I thought that the Boy Scouts were involved in the Soapbox Derby, but they do the what do they call them? Matchbox cars, I think, right?
Yeah.
That run down a slotted track. Yeah, they still do that. I think it might be the Cub Scouts. I think it might be the little kids.
Yeah,
according to this.
Teenage girl, I must have been 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
They had sesquicentennial, and I was in the Mariner Scouts. And we us girls, and my one girlfriend's dad, we neighbor loaned us his truck, and we decorated that thing all up. Then we sat in the truck to our turn to go up Main Street. We were down below the library there, sitting in that street there. Oh, I remember our uniforms were kind of on the heavy side. It was really warm that day. But I remember the sesquicentennial, yes.
Now, you said you mentioned something I've never heard of before. You were in the Mariner Scouts, did you say?
Uh-huh.
What was that all about?
Well, then they had the Sea Scouts.
Oh.
And you know that building between going up Monroe, by the Monroe Hotel there, Caddy Corner, that building sits in a V like there because the one road goes out.
Yes,
it's 422.
It's a very awkward, unusual shaped building. Yeah, it's V shaped. Yeah, I know that building. Yeah.
Well, we had a
land ship up there. The Boy Sea Scouts did. They had a land ship, and it was built like the, you know, like the top of the boat. Mm-hmm. And they had all the railings and all, and we learned to march and do that. We'd win and mix with the Sea Scouts once in a while.
Huh.
And one time we went clear to Erie, and we went down to the Coast Guards, and all of us girls, we got on that Coast Guard, and them Coast Guards took us for a ride out in Erie.
Wow.
That was really nice, and I remember we went to a restaurant that was made like a ship in the front, and it was Captain John's, and they had all kind of seafood there, and they served us some stuff, and I said, oh, that was salmon, and the man said, no, that was crab. You know, they were patties.
Well, there
but
was
I remember going to Erie, and yeah. I don't know what happened to the Mariner Scouts. I think they lasted another year or so.
I never heard of either the Mariners or the Sea Scouts. That would have been interesting.
The Mariners were the girls and the Sea Scouts were the boys. We had really pretty blue skirts and mini tops and a tie.
Huh.
And so maybe somebody that's listening will tell you a little more or something that they remember that.
I would be very interested, yeah.
They didn't keep the Mariners too long. And our ladies that had been in the scouting, us girls got older. And somehow, I don't know, my childhood friend's mom and another lady knew about these Mariners and asked us if we'd like to be that. And we said, sure, you know. And so I remember sitting in a truck in a sesquicentennial. I don't know how many years that was back then. I was maybe 49, 50, somewhere in there.
Hmm.
Yeah.
While you've been chatting, I was trying to do a quick Google search here. And at least for my very quick look, it appears the Mariner Scouts were related to the Girl Scouts somehow.
Yeah, they were the senior scouts.
Oh,
we
I
were
see.
Senior scouts.
Okay.
Because we got older, and so they decided to do that. And I don't know if anybody ever picked up again in that. I don't think so, you know? Mm. I think we were the only Mariner Scouts around. And we lived out, you know, out in Jefferson Township, most of us girls.
Wow. So it was a good experience for you, huh?
Oh, it was beautiful, yeah.
Yeah.
It was really nice. I'm sorry they never got to, I don't know how much longer that stayed, because after that I got married.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways,
well,
I just remember that. It was so nice. It was really a long way in that truck in the sun, let me tell you. That was a really huge parade.
Well, thanks for sharing with us. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the information. I never heard of the Mariner Scouts before. Thanks a lot.
Well, you can look that up.
The
Sea Scouts. Okay.
Thanks, my friend.
I think that was a Chrysler building at the time they had that land.
It was a car dealership at one point.
I don't know if it was Chrysler or what, but it was a car dealership, and it was on the second floor. Mm. I don't know if that land ship is still on there or not. Somebody built beautiful, you know, the front and the back and the sides, and we had to march all around in there to which one we were going to.
Hmm.
You know, I have to remember all that. I can't.
Thanks, my
friend. Okay.
Good to talk with you today.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye bye. 283-2525, our number, 283-2525. Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. Hello? Guess there's nobody there. Huh? Guess not. Yeah. So the Mariner Scouts, never heard of that before. 283-2525. Oh, my goodness, it's almost time for us to wrap up the open talk segment of our program here today, because we're going to be meeting our first guest here very, very shortly. And we're going to be speaking with Kathy Emmons, who is going to be the main speaker at the upcoming Good Friday breakfast at the Butler County YMCA, the Y on Good Friday. So stick around. More to come. And after that, we're going to be chatting with students from Butler High School who will be raising the curtain on their spring musical, The Little Mermaid. And that's coming up this weekend, I believe. We'll get the details from them a little bit later on the program today. First of all, we'll take a quick break and hear from a couple of our sponsors, and then we'll be chatting with Kathy Emmons. And one of the folks who help us to bring you this program every day is Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center, located on Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande Restaurant, just off Newcastle Road. You know where those two restaurants are. You just drive back between them there into the Shockey Mini Storage, follow the signs, and bada-bing, bada-bing, you're there. Gone Postal Butler. What a great service this is. I'm a customer. I've utilized them. What they do is package your items for shipping, and they take care of all that nuisance stuff that you've got to do when you're going to send something, right? Box, special tape, labels, all that. They do it all. And you can ship it any way you want. FedEx, UPS, United States Postal Service, they'll do it for you. And at a very affordable price, too. They also have an official notary there in case you need something notarized before it's shipped out. And they also offer copying service, scanning, faxing. You can even rent a temporary mailbox there if you want. Call them for more information on their services, 724-841-0044. That's Goin' Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center, 140 Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants on the Newcastle Road. Stick around in just a minute. We'll be talking with our first guest today, Kathy Emmons, here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We will be back right after these words.
Concordia Visiting Nurses is a Medicare-certified home health agency offering services provided by healthcare professionals like registered and licensed practical nurses, physical, speech, and occupational therapists, home health aides, and many more. We also provide specialty services like palliative care and telehealth monitoring. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Welcome back, listeners. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program. I've been looking forward to talking to our first guest today for a few weeks since I found out she was going to be with us. She is Kathy Emmons, and she is going to be the guest speaker at the annual Good Friday Breakfast hosted each year by the Butler County Family YMCA, the Butler Y, on Good Friday. Kathy Emmons, nice to meet you. Great to have you with us for a little while here today.
Nice to be here, Dave. Thank you.
Good Friday is March 30th, which, son of a gun, is just a little bit over 2 weeks away.
Yes,
that's hard
is.
To believe, isn't it? Wow.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Easter's early this year, so that meant that Ash Wednesday was early, and Good Friday is in March, which is a little bit unusual, too.
It'll be a cold day, but a good morning to be out.
Well, I hope it's a little warmer than it has been for the past couple of days, anyway.
It can't be colder. Come on.
I don't think so, anyway. Do you have a topic that you're going to speak on, Kathy?
Yeah, my title for the morning is I Wish I Had a Different Life.
Oh, well, that's certainly intriguing.
Mm. Well, you know, it's Good Friday. I was thinking about what I wanted to share, what's important to remember about Good Friday, and so I thought about the story of Jesus in his denial by his friends, in his trial, his crucifixion. I think all of those things, to me, started with his plea in the Garden of Gethsemane. You know, Father, if there's any way that this cup could pass from me, then please let it pass from me. And of course, his response was, but not what I want, what you want. And I think, you know what, that's really what the essence of his life was, that's the essence of what Good Friday is the fact that none of us want the life we have in some ways, because life can be very, very hard. So whether you're talking about disease, or you're talking about depression, or you're talking about suffering, or injustice, or whatever it is, we all wish we had a different life in some regard. And what's so interesting is that Jesus thought the same thing.
Listeners, some of you may know Kathy Emmons, some of you may listen to her. She is the worship leader and music director in one of Pittsburgh's urban congregations, and she's also heard on 101.5 Word FM afternoons, right, Kathy?
Right, 4 to 6.
Mm-hmm, 4 to 6 p.m. with John and Kathy. You will join a long line of pretty distinguished speakers that have been coming to Butler for this event over the past decade, and they've been doing it for a long, long time. Last year's speaker was Wendy Bell, formerly of WTAE Channel 4 TV. Other speakers within the past few years have included Bill Hillgrove, play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers on radio and also of the Pitt Panthers college basketball team. So it will be nice to welcome you to Butler. Have you been here before, Kathy?
I sure have been. I've been to Butler a lot, but I've never been to the YMCA, so I'm excited about that. I know I have some friends up there who belong to that organization. And, you know, it was so interesting when I was asked to speak at the Good Friday event for the YMCA because my husband's grandfather was the international president of the YMCA.
Wow.
So, I mean, I never realized there was a connection. My friends who were part of the YMCA, I didn't even realize that that was an organization that they believed in. And so, I don't know, it's kind of neat. I'm going to bring some of the artifacts of my husband's grandfather that he gave to us when he passed away, that he collected when he was traveling around the world for them. So it's going to be a good morning.
Let me just give a couple of informational items to the listeners while we're chatting with you. This is an event for the whole family. There'll be a light breakfast, and then you'll hear Kathy Emmons speak. It all gets underway at 7 a.m. on Good Friday at the Butler Y, which is on North Washington Street. And tickets, if you're interested in coming, $5 donation for adult, $2 for youth 15 and under. So it's a nice day. A nice way to start Good Friday. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Kathy Emmons. You're a worship leader. Have you been doing that for a while, and how did you get into to that as a vocation, a career?
Well, I've been a worship leader for 19 years. I started when I had just had my first baby. I was in the workforce for a decade after I graduated from college, and I had decided that I wanted to stay home with my first child. But then once I stayed home with her, I realized that first off, we were in a tough place financially. And second of all, my church needed somebody to step in and just do some music on an interim basis. And of course, you know, some interim bases turn out to be long-term arrangements. So what started out as an interim turned out to be something that's almost 20 years long. So I work at Belfield Presbyterian Church, which is on the University of Pittsburgh campus. It's a historic church of Pittsburgh, and because of its location, its main goal is, of course, to worship God, but its secondary goal is to reach the campuses that surround it. So we're on Pitt's campus, but we're very close to CMU's campus, we're close to Carlos campus, we're close to Chatham's campus and Duquesne's campus and Point Park. And so our congregation is about 50-50, 50 students, 50% students, and 50% families. But the families who are there believe in the mission of the church and want to reach college students and really believe in the vibrancy of the university and are excited about the ideas and the conversation that go on there. And so it's been a pleasure for me to work there as long as I have.
Where is it exactly on the Pitt campus?
It's right on Fifth Avenue. If you know where the Pitt bookstore is, it's directly across the street and also across the street from the towers.
Yeah, no, right where you are. Yeah. Did you also have training or interest in music?
Yeah, I had a music minor when I was a Pitt student, and I also married a musician, and so he has been invaluable to me. I mean, I'm the one who is listed in the staff, but my husband is every bit as much a part of the music at the church and has been for a long time. So we have a great team there. It's not the kind of situation where people come to the church and I stand up and strum a guitar and sing by myself. I mean, I have a whole team of people. We have, you know, at least 10 people that serve on a weekly basis with me. That's a rotating team. And a lot of them are college students because, again, that's what we're there for.
So you minored in music. Your husband is a musician. I'm guessing there's a piano in your home.
There is a piano in my home, so it really needs tuning. So if you know anyone who can stop by quickly, I got to get that. You know, when the weather changes, it really messes with your piano.
It does, yeah. And we've been up and down and sideways over the past couple of months here. Yeah. We're speaking, listeners, if you're just joining us here on It's Your Turn on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're speaking with Kathy Emmons, who will be the guest speaker on Good Friday. It's just over 2 weeks away now, 2 weeks from this Friday. At the Butler YMCA for their annual Good Friday Fellowship Breakfast. It's an event for the whole family, by the way, men, women, and children. What do you think about church music today? Over the past couple of decades, at least, it seems to me it's changed quite a bit.
It has changed a lot. I mean, I think that there's a tendency for churches to divide on this issue. You know, you have your traditional service and you have your contemporary service, and that's the way our church is as well. There are people that prefer, you know, the hymns that are played on an organ or on a piano, and people that are more looking for a band like I have. But, you know, I resist that division as much as I possibly can, only because as Christians we need to recognize that our history is long. And there have been people who have followed Jesus who have written excellent music in all different generations. And so, I mean, I want to meet people where they are, but I also want to do my best to challenge people and say, you know what, sometimes go to the other service. Sometimes see what the other music has to offer. People who believe strongly in hymns tend to think that contemporary music is, you know, vacuous and simplistic, and I don't think that's true. And people who, you know, like contemporary music tend to think that traditional music is staid and boring, and I don't think that's true either. I think that there's bad music that was written, you know, 200 and 300 years ago. There are bad hymns, just like there's bad contemporary music, and there are beautiful hymns and beautiful current songs. So I think the more that we can be open-minded when we walk into a church and say, you know what, I'm not here for me anyway. This church is not here to meet all of my needs. It's me coming with an open mind and an open heart. I think we'll be better off. I think our churches will be healthier.
I find it gratifying to see in churches of several different denominations that I know of where you will find the same hymns sung, particularly some of those ones that you mentioned from, 200, 300 years ago.
Right. I mean, we have a legacy that we should never ignore. And I think one of the great things, the thing I like to do a lot, is to take, you know, I lead the contemporary service, but I like to take traditional hymns, and I like to rework them in a way that kind of introduces them to a younger generation. They sound different. They incorporate different instruments. But the text is the same, and, you know, we honor not just the God whose truth we sing about, but we honor the people who followed him hundreds and hundreds of years ago and recognize that, you know, we're not the first people who ever believed, and we're not the most creative or most musical people that ever believed.
Kathy Emmons is going to speak on I Wish I Had It. Is it a Different Life?
A Different Life.
Yeah. I was taking notes as you spoke, but I didn't get the last word written down. I wish I had a different blank. I wish I had a different life.
Right.
You mentioned the denial that Christ felt by some of his followers, even some of his closest followers, and perhaps one of the closest of all, Peter.
Right.
Denied him not once, not twice, but three times.
Right. And Jesus knew he would do that, and Peter said that's a ridiculous idea. Of course I would never do that. And of course we know the story. It showed that Jesus knew Peter better than Peter knew Peter. And that is the way we all are. And again, you know, you look at a person like Peter and you think, he's going to look and think, I wish I had a different life. I wish I would never have done that to Jesus. I wish I wasn't so impetuous. I wish I wasn't so insistent. I wish I wasn't so sure of myself. But Jesus comes to him and says, I love you just the way you are. And you look at that friendship from Jesus' perspective, and he, you know, how many times did Jesus think, I wish I had better friends? You know, I wish I had humans who understood what my mission was and were able to stand with me. But in the Garden of Gethsemane, his friends fell asleep. You know, they couldn't even stay awake with him while he was grieving and thinking about what was waiting for him. But he was obedient to what God wanted him to do, and we need to do the same thing. We need to be obedient to what God calls us.
There's such, we're talking about the weather being up and down here this year. The reaction to Christ's entrance into Jerusalem
Certainly up and down. You know, the same people who were waving palm branches in front of him just a couple of days later were calling for his death.
And it's easy for us to read those stories and think, you know, how could people have done that? Or you read the Old Testament stories of Israel who followed God for a season and then fell away from God for a season and then had to repent and then followed. And you think, you know, how could they have done that? But we do it all the time. I think that we have a tendency to be, you know, cultural snobs, not just with our music, but in how we follow God and think that, oh, you know, we're doing it the right way. We're doing it the closest way to what God wanted. But I think what the scripture shows us, Old and New Testament, is that human nature is the same. The personalities change. Of course, every biblical character is unique, just like every one of us are unique, but our hearts are the same. Our tendency is to do what we want to do when we want to do it and wish that our lives were different. And I think the call of Good Friday is to do what Jesus did and say, you know what, as much as I want a different life, this is the one I've been given, and I need to say yes to God in this life.
When do you speak weekly at Belfield Presbyterian, Kathy?
Yes, I do.
Do you draw upon the scriptures of the day for your sermon, or do you sometimes just use a topic that seems appropriate?
Well, Dave, you might be happy to know that I'm not the one who preaches the sermon on a weekly basis. Our pastor, Josh Brown, does that. So I lead the music, and I do a couple things in the service that kind of hopefully lead people into a place where they understand why I've chosen the music I've chosen and perhaps how it fits into the message of the day. But I'm not the person that delivers, you know, the big message.
I see. Do you have speaking engagements other than connected with the church?
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, most of my work has to do with my my position on the radio at 101.5 in Pittsburgh. And so, you know, you'll find me around Pittsburgh speaking at organizations like the YMCA or local churches. I like to MC events, especially for organizations that I believe in. I love to do that. I love to put organizations in their best light. And so I enjoy that MC role a lot, and I tend to do that, you know, I don't know, 6, 7, 10 times a year.
Do you consider Good Friday one of the most sacred days of the year?
I can't think of a more sacred one. I think it's so hard with our schedules and the pace of American life to really take the time to enter into that, to recognize the import of the day. I was just talking to a bunch of college students on Sunday at church, and they all have class on Good Friday. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're going to be in class at noon, or they're going to be in class at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So, you know, what was traditionally in the church been the sacred time of noon to 3 p.m. has been taken up with, you know, either work or school or whatever it is. I think we're the worst for it.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because I had a note scribbled here just within the past couple of minutes. I can remember, and when the practice stopped, I do not know, but I can definitely remember at least a couple of decades ago when many businesses closed for that period from 12 noon to 3 on Good Friday. That happened here in the city of Butler. It was rather widespread among the downtown merchants. Of course, that's back in the day when almost no stores were open on Sunday either. So,
right, and it is very rare to find that now. So it's just, I think it's a challenge. I think if we're going to make Good Friday meaningful, we're going to have to really try.
Well, and of course, a sacred day and a day for sadness, really, but you can look forward to just a couple of days later, because that's one of the great days in the church calendar.
Yeah, and I think that the importance of entering into the sadness allows you to experience the joy of the resurrection on Easter. I mean, if you don't go into the Maundy Thursday service and recognize Jesus' last meal and his abandonment by his friends, and if you don't enter into Good Friday and recognize the crucifixion, the pain, the suffering, the trial of Jesus, then the resurrection won't mean as much to you. I mean, it's one of those things. We want to go for the happy, and we want to go for the optimistic and the good ending to the story, and thank goodness that's there. But But I think that we lose out if we don't recognize the pain that happened before, because then it makes Jesus seem like he was different. He wasn't fully human. You know, he suffered greatly, and that was a model for us, because each one of us suffers greatly. And so when we enter into times of darkness and difficulty, he went there too. There was nothing that he shied away from.
Did you ever imagine, I've done this a few times, imagine what it must have been like to be one of the apostles during this weekend, some 2,000 years ago, for example, being at what we now call Maundy Thursday or Holy Thursday. Mm-hmm. It was a Seder meal.
Right.
It was what Jews did and what Jews still do, by the way, at Passover time. But can you imagine being there? You know, what if we were in that room when that was happening 2,000 years ago?
What? Right. And what? I mean, they had no idea what was coming, even though he had given them a lot of clues. You know, you can't. I mean, it's when we look back, we know what happened, we know the story, we know the details. But if it was you and you were in the room, and Jesus was talking to you, and he was saying, you know, if you don't let me wash your feet, then you have no part in me. You're not going to be part of my kingdom. You don't understand if you don't let me be your servant. And you're thinking, well, that's really mysterious, and that's odd, and that's really uncomfortable to me. You have no idea how uncomfortable you're going to be over the next 3 days. You have no idea the depths of sadness that you're going to experience, and the rejection and the disillusionment. And then imagining seeing a dead person alive on that Sunday, it is amazing to imagine that humans experience that.
Yeah, even that whole weekend, wow. We're talking, listeners, with Kathy Emmons. We need to take a quick break here. We have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with her on the It's Your Turn program here on WISR, and we'll pick up our conversation right after these words.
Welcome to your standard junkyard. What do you want?
Hi, I'm looking for an alternator for my 2009 truck.
I'm sure there's something out there. Sign this waiver that states we're not responsible for product effectiveness or injury in the yard. And no, there isn't any order out there, so check each row. Next!
When your vehicle needs a new or used part, go see Millich Auto Wrecking. Their inventory is neatly organized, and they are committed to finding the part you need without the hassle. Open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5 on Route 38 Oneida Valley Road. Just look for the big black and red sign for Millich Auto Wrecking.
Welcome back, listeners. If you're joining us a little bit late, welcome. Kathy Emmons is our guest on this segment of It's Your Turn. She is a worship leader and music director at Belfield Presbyterian Church on the Pitt campus. You can also hear her every afternoon on 101.5 Word FM in Pittsburgh. I was looking at your brief bio, and it appears that two of your favorite authors are English people. Jane Austen and C.S. Lewis, right?
Yes, I have a fascination with English literature. I just love it. It's not that I don't like American literature. It's just, I don't know, it's just not quite the same. Maybe it's the accent I can hear in my head.
I can understand that. You have two pretty disparate authors there.
I do, but you know what? They're in a great tradition of British authors who were deep thinkers about human nature. And they also wrote with incredible style and skill. And those are the two things that I love most. And perhaps that's why my love of British literature is so high. The style and the skill with which they write is what makes their ideas come alive. And I don't think you could find two better people. I mean, of course, you know, I love Charlotte Bronte. She's another one of my favorites. And so I don't mean to, you know, or J.R. Tolkien, who I love, but I would say that Jane and Clive Staples are my two favorites.
Mm. J.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis were good friends. They were.
Yeah, you know, I was just, one of my friends was in Britain not too long ago, and, you know, the little pub where they used to meet, where the Inklings used to meet, their literary group is still there. I would love to see that.
Mm. I first encountered C.S. Lewis when I had to read in a summer reading program. I think I was between my junior and senior years of high school. The Screwtape Letters,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the I don't know. For that age, that was a pretty complex book.
I bet it was. I bet it was. Yeah. And it's a, it's a clever premise, but it has, again, deep, deep thoughts, just like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I mean, that's a very simple story told for children, but the ideas in it are eternal.
Yeah. Well, I have a fascination with not necessarily specifically those two, but with the British authors as well.
Oh, yeah? Who are your favorites?
I don't know. Last name of Malarkey, were of Irish heritage.
Uh-huh.
So
okay.
I tend to lean more toward W.B. Yeats and John Millington Synge and Augusta Gregory and that crowd.
Oh, wow. I don't know much about that crowd, so I'd have to investigate them.
Kathy Emmons will be in Butler, in just a couple of weeks, actually. She'll be the guest speaker at the Good Friday Breakfast, March 30th. That's 2 weeks from this Friday, by the way, at the Butler YMCA. Well, gosh, Kathy, I know your schedule's busy. We appreciate you being with us for a few minutes here today. Nice to meet you and nice to talk to you.
Very nice to meet you as well, Dave. Hope to see a lot of your listeners out on Good Friday at the Butler YMCA.
All right, and we'll welcome you to Butler. Thanks for chatting with us.
Happy to be here.
Kathy Emmons visiting with us today. I'm going to give you a little bit of information about the tickets for the Good Friday breakfast. $5 donation for adults, $2 for youth 15 and under. You can either get them in advance if you so desire at the Butler Y, the YMCA, or they'll also be available at the door the morning of the event if you decide that you're available to go at the last minute. Good Friday morning, of course, 7 a.m., bright and early, at the Butler YMCA Gymnasium on North Washington Street. They've been holding this event for decades at the Butler Y. In fact, this year will be the, I was searching for the number while I was talking with Kathy and I couldn't find it, 68th. This will be the 68th year, so it's almost 70 years. Yeah, that's a long time they've been holding this event. And by the way, it's for the whole family, men, women, kids, all are welcome. The breakfast will be provided by Simply Catered. It'll be a light breakfast. And then you'll get to hear Kathy Emmons. So that should be great. Last year's speaker was Wendy Bell, who also visited with us, by the way, here on the program. A former news anchor for Channel 4, WTAE Television in Pittsburgh. I was here last year, a few years back. Bill Hillgrove was the speaker. And not only did Bill Hillgrove chat with us, he wasn't on the telephone, he actually came here to the studio that day after he had spoken in the morning at the Good Friday breakfast. He joined us here in the studio that afternoon. He was already in Butler. So pretty prestigious speakers down there, and a lot of local speakers, too, who were very good. I've been speaking at that event over the years. Reverend Eric Park a couple of years ago, Reverend Kevin Fazio a couple of years ago, Sandra Eilenfeld a couple of years ago, Reverend J. David Panther a couple of years back. A lot of others, too, a lot of others, local clergy. The 68th annual Good Friday Breakfast at the Y, the Butler County Family YMCA, coming up on Good Friday. Well, we want to remind you, we have more to come here on It's Your Turn. We'll be chatting with the students from Butler High School momentarily, who will be presenting their spring musical this weekend. But I do want to remind you that tomorrow is a big day. We have our annual antique show on the air, on the radio tomorrow. Apologies to PBS for their Antiques Roadshow. But we do it with, and we have for many, many years, with a very well-known local antiques dealer, Ellen King. And she'll be here, and Ellen is happy to take calls from you on the radio tomorrow if you have an item around the house that you might think is an antique or might be interested in how much it would be worth. Glassware of all sorts, dinnerware, pitchers, glasses, and dolls. She also is knowledgeable on other areas too, but in particular glassware and dolls. So if you have any questions, get them ready. We'll be going right at the beginning of the program today, or tomorrow, with Ellen King. Also visiting with us tomorrow, Judy Nye and Annabelle Brunemer. That's because we're doing this program in advance of this weekend's Intermediate League Antiques Show and Sale. And we'll have all of the details on that for you tomorrow as well. Okay, let's take a break here and we'll bring our next guest into the studio and get them all mic'd up and ready to go. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes here on It's Your Turn on WISR.
Did you know that during emergencies, drivers must move over for police, firefighters, and other response personnel? And now, thanks to the Move Over Pennsylvania law, they must also move over for electric line crews. Hello, I'm John Ivankovich, Manager of Operations for Central Electric Cooperative. This law helps protect my fellow linemen as we work all hours of the day and night, in the worst of weather, to restore electric service to our members. During declared emergencies, drivers must move over to a lane that is not adjacent to the emergency response area, if possible, or slow down if they cannot change lanes. Those failing to move over can be found guilty of a summary offense and fined. When you see our line crews working during an emergency situation, be sure to move over to help them stay safe. This is John Ivankovich with Central Electric Cooperative. Our tradition is to service. Our responsibility is to safety. This institution is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
Sunnyview Nursing and Rehabilitation Center has a rich history in Butler. Now they are making continuous improvements and technological advancements to better serve the community. Sunnyview specializes in short-term rehabilitation and skilled nursing. Schedule a tour to see their beautiful facility. Call 332-6872 or visit sunnyviewcenter.com. Sunnyview Nursing and Rehabilitation Center, close to your home and close to your heart.
Attention Alexa users, did you know you can listen to WISR through your Amazon Echo? That's right. Alexa, play WISR.
Playing WISR.
WISR is proud to provide you with the music you love on the devices you use. Radio, computer, tablet, smartphone, and now your Amazon Alexa-enabled device. WISR, we're everywhere you are. Just ask Alexa.
Welcome back, good friends. Great to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. Kind of gray today, a few flurries. We're looking at a chance, at least, of snow showers later today, tonight, and tomorrow, and maybe even lingering into Friday. It's going to stay pretty cold until the weekend. Well, old man winter is hanging on. This is the last few days that he's going to be able to do that, we hope. First day of spring is a week from today, next Tuesday. Several guests visiting with us in the studio on the next segment of the program, including Dale Van Lanningham, who's on the faculty at Butler Senior High School and has been the director of the school musicals for, gosh, I don't know, many, many years, Dale.
Quite a few, yeah.
You know how many?
I started directing the Thespian musical back in 98, so I'm coming up on 20 years. But I took over the all-school musical in 2002.
And what do you teach on the faculty?
I teach social studies.
Social studies?
Mm-hmm.
History?
Yes.
Any particular kind, by the way?
I teach U.S. history, and I also teach American government.
I'm kind of a history nut, so I always liked American history. Always fascinating.
Me too.
Yeah. Also with us are three students, all cast members of the all-school musical, which is coming up this weekend at Butler High. Let's say hello to our students, Noah Miranda. Noah, nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Also, Emma Hurley. Hi, Emma. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you.
And also, Noah Mills. Noah, good to see you as well.
Good to see you, too.
So the musical is The Little Mermaid.
Yes.
This is a Disney movie, Disney musical?
Yeah, Disney movie, 1989, I believe it was.
So the movie came first, and then the musical was adapted? Yeah. Yep. Which is kind of backwards from the way it's usually done, right?
Oftentimes, although Disney's been pretty successful over the last about 20 years. First with Beauty and the Beast, and then they did Lion King and Little Mermaid. They've also done Tarzan, and I'm sure I'm missing a few.
That's true. They all started as movies and then were adapted into...
Yeah, well, Disney figured out there's a whole market out there in theater world, so...
Yeah. I guess I hadn't thought about that. I mean, the original model was Oklahoma, Sound of Music, all of them, they were... Broadway
first,
plays
yeah.
first, and then a couple of years later, they would be made into movies. Well, let's talk a little bit with our cast members here. Noah Miranda, what part do you play?
I play Prince Eric.
Okay. Emma?
I'm going to be playing Ariel.
Okay. Okay, and Noah, what about you?
I play Sebastian.
Sebastian, I have seen this show, but not for a long, long time. Sebastian is
a crab.
A crab.
Yes.
I couldn't remember whether it was a sea. There's a seagull too, isn't there?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's Scuttle.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're a crab. Are you anything like a crab in real life, Noah?
I don't think so. But I guess he's over there shaking his head.
He's shaking his head. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit, Noah or Emma, whoever wants to take the mic here, a little bit about the plot of this show. First of all, it's an undersea fable, right, Emma?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And very familiar Disney movie. So The Little Mermaid, she is the princess under the sea, and just like any other Disney princess, has her big dreams, and her dreams just happen to be becoming a human. So the whole show is about her journey to become human, and she falls in love with Prince Eric and gets cursed by Ursula the Sea Witch. And yeah.
So, Noah, you're playing Prince Eric.
Yes. Prince Eric actually is a pretty interesting character to me because he's almost the exact opposite of Ariel, and it's funny that they fall in love because Ariel wants to go on land, but all Prince Eric wants to do the whole show is just be in the sea because he loves it out there.
I say opposites attract. I don't really believe that, though. Yeah. Well, they do in this show, anyway.
Yeah. They do.
So, what about the setting? I mean, is it sometimes above the water and sometimes below? How are you staging it?
Yeah, it's, again, I think a big theme in the show is opposites, because the first act, there's a lot of underwater scenes, and then she eventually trades her voice for legs to go meet Prince Eric on land, and then the rest of the show, for the most part, takes place above water. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have these, opposite ideas on, the land and the sea, and they all correspond to each other throughout the show.
You trade your voice for legs.
I do, yeah.
Is this your singing voice, or aren't you able to speak after you've made it?
Cannot speak, cannot sing, nothing.
Wow. Well, how do you communicate with the prince here?
There's lots of pantomiming. I just try to mouth a lot of words, do a lot of actions. It's fun because a lot of the time you find Eric or Sebastian or whoever I'm having a conversation, if you want to call it that, with, kind of talking to themselves because I'll react, but I can't say anything else.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit, just move that mic a little bit over there to Noah. Tell me a little bit about your character, the crab. How does he fit into all of this?
Okay, so my character is I guess King Triton's
Wait a minute, there's another character we haven't talked about. Yes. Who's King Triton?
He's the king under the sea.
Ah.
Yes.
Is he related to Ariel here?
Yes. It's his, her father.
Ah. Also, he's the king, so you're like a princess.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And then my character really doesn't want Ariel to go above the water, so I try to keep her down in the water, and I do all this stuff to try to convince her, but she still doesn't listen. So then I do come around kind of towards the end, but yeah.
Do you go above the water at the end?
Yes, I do go above the water.
Do you have to trade your legs in or your claws or something?
No, I don't have to do that.
This story, at least the basic outline of the plot, comes from a fairy tale, doesn't it?
Yeah, Christian Anderson, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually pretty old, yeah.
I don't know whether it had the same name or not, but...
it did. It had the same name.
The Little Mermaid.
The story is pretty different. I guess the general premise is the same, but the story is pretty different, yeah.
There's a lot of similar tales and mythology and so on and so forth. I know I've studied the Celtic mythology a great deal, and they have the stories of what they call the Selkies, seals that wanted to become human and came up out of the sea, and then they were human. You know? Very strange. But you see this a lot in cross-cultural mythology and tales and so on. It's not limited to just one country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit more, Noah Miranda, about Prince Eric. He's, what is he, sailing or out on a boat? Or how does he first discover this, what becomes the love of his life?
So what ends up happening, actually, is that Eric, he's having this crisis because it's about to be his 21st birthday, and his right-hand man, Grimsby, he is trying to convince Eric to get married. He wants him to get married so he can become king, have a queen.
21 times a wasting, right?
Yeah, you know, you gotta get moving. But and Eric doesn't want to become a king. He doesn't want to get married. He just wants to stay and be in the sea, opposite to Ariel. And then that's when he hears this voice, which is Ariel's voice, you find out. And then he spends a lot of Act 1 looking for that voice, and she actually ends up saving him. He almost drowns. And then he finally, she saves him. And he finds her after she loses her voice, and then there's a big, issue about he wants to find the voice still, but then he starts to fall in love with Ariel as she's, living with him for a couple days after she goes on to land. And it's pretty interesting.
So that's interesting for, a life lesson. He wanted to find her because of her beautiful voice, mm-hmm. and we finally did find her. She doesn't have a voice anymore.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest troubles that he has all through Act 2 is that he starts to love Ariel, but he doesn't know that Ariel is the one with the voice that he is in love with. And there's several times where they're together, and Ursula, the sea witch who took her voice, doesn't want them to get together, so she kind of throws the voice out there, and he, remembers, oh, I love that voice. I need to find that voice. And it's...
Well, this is an Ursula character?
Ursula.
Like the Wicked Witch of the West here, right?
Yeah.
She's a troublemaker down there, down under the ground. Yeah. Do we know who plays some of the other principal parts? For example, Ursula? I don't know. I don't need to have a cast list here. Do you know these students?
Emma? So, Sarah Bankhart's going to be playing Ursula. She's also a senior like all of mm-hmm. us are. And we
could
have
fun with that part, I bet, huh?
Oh, yeah. That's a very fun part.
A lot
part.
Of evil laughs.
Wicked Witch.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And then you have Luigi Fell's going to be playing King Triton. He's uh-huh. a junior. And you have Tara Potter's going to be playing Scuttle, and Miles Schaefer's going to be playing Flounder. And that covers, I think, most of the principal leads.
Yeah, a lot of it.
There's not only a bird, a seagull, right?
Yeah, that Scuttle is the seagull.
Scuttle, mm-hmm. but there's a fish, too.
And Flounder is the fish,
yeah,
yes.
Flounder is her...
It's like Ariel's sidekick.
Yeah,
I see. So we have a crab, a fish, and a seagull.
Yeah.
Eric doesn't have quite as many friends. He just has Grimsby, who is played by Reed Kruger, a senior, right. and Grimsby's just always hammering on Prince Eric to get hitched. But
let me talk with director Dale Van Lanningham for a moment or so. How do you stage this? Are there instructions, or is it up to the director to decide just how far he wants to go?
All the above. I mean, there are always suggestions in scripts, and this one came with a couple of handouts to provide, some suggestions also. But mm-hmm. You kind of have to create it. You read the script, and you look at what you have and what you have available, and you work with an incredibly talented and creative creative team, and you put it all together.
So I'm thinking that when you're under the sea, you've got
we have backdrops.
Some rocks and stuff.
All of our scenery
Maybe
is...
Maybe a few fish hanging from yeah. the flies.
We don't have hanging fish. But we do have fish on sticks, but that's a whole other story. We do all of our own scenery. It's all painted by, built and painted by the students, and we have several parent volunteers who enjoy working with it. So we work on Saturdays. We build all of our own scenery. So, yeah, we have a number of backdrops and such that represent underwater, scenes. And, of course, we have ones for, the beach. We have one for the palace, Prince Eric's castle, if you will. So there's a lot of different locations. We had to build a ship because...
I was going
to
say, you probably need a ship yeah. scene. For everyone.
So we have a ship, too, that breaks apart in the storm. You got to be creative.
Pretty complex, then.
Yeah, I have a great team, and they come up with great ideas.
Do students, it's a little bit parenthetical, but do students get credit for doing the musical in any way?
No, they do not. It's extracurricular. As far as their graduation requirements go, no. But, I mean, I think the experience is well worth it. I think they can get a lot of a good skills mm-hmm. from doing the musical. And I think teamwork, time management, just an ability to perform the talents that they have. There's a lot of different things, I think, like a lot of extracurricular activities. It provides something that you can't measure with a test, and it provides things that don't show up on your transcripts necessarily, but in many ways equally important.
Time management especially, Emma, because you said you're all seniors, right?
Right, yes.
So here we are approaching the middle of March. Yeah. You've got April, May, and then bingo, your high school careers are over, so
exactly.
You're mighty, mighty busy.
Don't remind me.
Uh, time management would be crucial, trying to fit in rehearsals and performances for a musical.
Yeah. I found it especially difficult this year.
I would imagine you started probably pretty much after the holidays, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
first day back.
First day back
after the holidays.
Do you have auditions before the holiday break, Dale?
Or? Yeah, we have auditions usually mid-December.
Ready to go right after
New
Year's.
Yeah, so we're good. We can get everything together, and we start the first day back from Christmas, yeah.
Let's talk about music. This is a musical, after all. Mm-hmm. Noah Mirando, do you have any favorite songs that you sing? The only one that I can remember for sure from this show is Beyond the Sea, right? Is it Beyond the Sea?
Under the Sea.
Under the Sea. Beyond the Sea, Under the Sea, Over the Sea, something like that.
I won't dive incredibly deep into like the song's content, but Eric has a lot of songs that are very serious because he's a very moody teenager who just wants to find that girl. But
I'm just a teenager in love.
Yeah, that's exactly how he is. But the first song, one of the first songs in the show, it's called Fathoms Below. It's like a sea shanty. There's all these sailors on deck, and they're all like swinging around having a good time. So that's a nice song that I personally like myself.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Emma? I'm sure Ariel has probably several songs.
Yeah, I think the one she's most well known for is Part of Your World, which is actually in the Disney movie as well. So that one's a really fun one. Also, I feel like there's a lot of pressure there to own up to that song because that's such a well-known song. Mm-hmm. I also really love a lot of the songs that she does in Act Two. There's Beyond My Wildest Dreams. That one's a fun one. It's really upbeat, and she's in the castle for like basically the first time, and she's just kind of looking around taking in all this like amazing stuff that she's dreamed of her whole life. And I also really love Positivity, which is the opening of Act Two, which is Ariel on the beach. So she's not actually singing, but the seagull Scuttle, as well as all his seagull friends, are teaching her how to walk on the beach, which is a really fun number.
That's right, because she just got legs, huh?
Mm-hmm, right.
Now, whenever you are out of the sea, above, you can't speak to Eric or anybody else.
No.
But can you sing?
Does
the audience hear you but nobody else? You understand what I'm getting
at? Yes, yes. So the songs that Ariel does sing in Act Two, they're kind of her singing her thoughts. So no one else on the stage can hear her, but the audience can.
So it's like in the comics. You got a word balloon up above you.
Yeah, there. Right, you're, right.
You're singing away, huh? What about the crab, Noah Mills? Do you get to do any singing?
Yes. I think my favorite song that I get to sing is Under the Sea.
Because, there it is, the one I couldn't think of the title of. Yes.
It's like a huge party, and we're trying to convince Ariel to stay underwater because it's obviously better under the sea. So we try to do that. That's in Act 1. And then in Act 2, I sing Kiss the Girl, and that's like I'm trying to get Eric to kiss her so that, you know, everything's all good, but, yeah.
Doesn't work, huh?
Yeah.
Failure to launch, so to speak.
Yeah.
Are there any big production numbers in this show, or are most of them solos or duets?
No, a couple big ones. Under the Sea's a big one.
Under the Sea.
Kiss the Girl.
I guess I should have realized.
30-plus people in it.
Yeah.
Kiss the Girl's another really
big one.
Kiss the
Girl, yes.
Fathoms Below, you were talking about. Mm-hmm. That's got all the sailors in it. That's probably got a dozen or more people in it.
Well, you got to have a couple of big production numbers in a musical.
There's quite a few, yeah.
What makes it go.
Yeah,
do you have a lot of, ordinarily I would say townspeople that you often are able to put into a show, especially a High School Musical? Can you put in any extra parts? Do you have a pretty large cast?
Well, like I said, with those production numbers, I mean, we need undersea creatures for the numbers. We need, the number that Emma was talking about, where she's singing in her head. Mm-hmm. Well, she's being accompanied to by, you know, a group of maids who are trying to get her, you know, a dress and get her cleaned up and ready for, you know, living in the palace. And so, you know, we have to have them, and there's a whole number. Oh, that's a big number, too. The chef number, yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that one. Oh, man.
Chef Louis number, yeah. That has a big group in it. There's a chase involved. The chef is chasing Sebastian around. Thinks Sebastian should go in the stew, and he's trying, of course, not to.
I could imagine that would be you're probably pretty scared about that.
Yeah,
huh?
That's a whole number. So, yeah, there's a lot of opportunities to put people in, which is one of the reasons we picked a show. Yeah, it gives us a lot of flexibility.
You use students to build your set and your scenery. What about in the orchestra pit?
All of them, yeah. All entire orchestra's students. Yeah.
Butler High students. Well, I think that's the way an all-school musical should be.
And we have the students. We have the numbers. I mean, you know, sometimes smaller schools have difficulty with that. They don't have as many musicians. That's a different situation. But we have the students, so, yeah, we use them.
And they're able to handle the Broadway charts?
Hmm? Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're doing well. They're doing very well.
What about your music? Who's directing that for you?
Music direction is being done by Mrs. Ali Arabia. She's a elementary music teacher here in Butler. She teaches at the middle school. And our pit's conducted by Ms. Shanna Kelly, who's also a elementary music teacher in the district. She's out at Center Township now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we have two co-choreographers. One's Danielle Smith, and the other one is Stephanie Marshall, who's been with me in the program for quite a while.
Yeah.
But that's the main staff, yeah.
I hesitate to ask. Everybody knows how, if you're in a lake or a swimming pool, how difficult it is to move. You know, you have to kind of go in slow motion. So do you have to do any dancing underwater, Emma? Do you have to dance in slow motion, for goodness sakes?
I don't have to dance in slow motion, but I do have to dance in my tail, which it's not too bad. I mean, it's fun. It's not too bad. Nothing too challenging.
Let's talk about costumes. Obviously, for at least part of this show, you're always a mermaid, but right. You have a tail for half of it, right?
Right, yeah. So Act 1, I'm basically mermaid the whole entire time, so I have a tail. And then I lose that tail whenever Ursula takes my voice and gives me my legs. So Act 2, I am human up until the very end where there's a whole... during the finale, Ariel becomes mermaid again, and then her father helps transform her back into a human to send her back with Eric where she really wants to be.
Happily ever after,
yeah.
Of course.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
of course.
The way a fairy tale has got to end.
Exactly.
So have you been able to practice? Well, I can't imagine being on stage with a tail. Have you been able to practice with that? Or?
Yes. We just started practicing in costumes last night. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically just a long dress kind of thing. So it's not too bad.
Mm-hmm. What about costumes for you, Noah Mills? I can only imagine what this might be.
I have very big claws. Okay. And I wear a red tuxedo. And a top hat with eyes. Big googly eyes.
Okay, I'm seeing
top.
A crab there, yeah. Yeah. The claws are on your arms?
Yeah, on my hands, yep.
In a red tuxedo.
Yes.
Very good. What about, Noah, you can wear anything you want. You're the prince, right? It's good to be the prince.
It does feel good to be the prince. He, Eric wears, for the first half of the show, you know, he's always out in the sea or looking for Ariel, so he has... like a nice loose-fitting shirt so he can move around in his boat. Mm-hmm. But the thing that has been probably the most shocking to me was Prince Eric wearing his leggings all the show. He has tights on like a prince should. And that has definitely been interesting for me. The second half of the show, he wears a nice, like a purple kind of vest shirt that looks very regal. It has a lot of buttons and, you know, stitches on it. And then he gets into his like little wedding outfit afterwards, just nice red, but you know, nothing too over the top like the mermaid and the crab have to wear.
Not the first time you've ever worn leggings.
Is the first time I had to wear leggings. It's been definitely, you actually would be surprised. The leggings are much easier to wear than the rest of the costume.
I would not be surprised, actually. I did a Shakespeare part one time many, many years ago, and that was the first time I ever wore leggings either. Yeah. So. We'll take a quick break here. We'll talk a little bit more with our guests in just a moment or so. One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today is Butler Motor Tours, butlerbus.com online. Boy, they are really getting revved up now for the spring and summer and fall travel season. And they have some wonderful trips, including a trip in early June. This is a four-day trip, June 4th through 7th, to the Finger Lakes region of... Lower Central New York. Beautiful, beautiful area. I visited there a couple of times. You'll also visit Watkins Glen, which is absolutely gorgeous. And they're also taking two trips to New York City on a tour called Lady Liberty Weekend. You'll see the Statue of Liberty and all the other sites in New York City. They're going in early May and also in mid-August. How about a trip down south? Late May, Southern Sensation. You'll see Georgia and the best of the antebellum South, Savannah, Atlanta, Jekyll Island, Charleston, and more. And yes, a trip to see the Ark Encounter.
That's the, I guess it's a really big tourist attraction, just opened last year, just south of Cincinnati, Ohio. Two options to go see the Ark Encounter, mid-June or early October. Details on these and many, many, many other vacation ideas online at butlerbus.com. It's an affordable and fun way to travel, and you don't have to worry about driving or getting tired or parking or any of that stuff, huh? Yeah. Take a snooze on one of their big, comfortable coaches. Butler Motor Tours, online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com. We need to check midday lottery numbers. We'll do that. Be back to wrap up with our guests here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 6262. The pick three is 462462. The pick four, 5017. The pick five, 57978. The wild ball for each of those is four. The treasure hunt is 9, 14, 22, 24, and 27. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $50,000.
Welcome back, friends. When I get a chance to talk with young adults, especially high school seniors, I always like to inquire a little bit about what they plan to do with the rest of their lives. They may not know for sure yet, but I'm sure you're thinking about it. Noah Miranda, what do you think you'll be doing a year from now?
Well, a year from now, I will be at Penn State University, Penn State, Maine, and I'm going to hopefully going for my pre-med degree. I don't really like to think about that, though, because that's a lot of serious stuff. So I like to think about, like, Penn State, what I'm going to be doing extracurricular-wise. The musicals definitely made me, like, enjoy theater a lot more, and I hope to be doing some theater there. I hope to be in the marching band there and hopefully get my degree.
Blue band, what instrument do you play?
I play the baritone horn.
All right.
And I actually was the drum major this year, so I hope to work towards drum major of blue band as well.
Wow, good luck to you. So, that'll be great.
Thank you very much.
Noah Mills, what about you? Any idea whatsoever what you might be doing a year from now?
Yes, I think that I'm going to go to BC3, and then I'm going to try to do this Disney College program, and you have to audition for that, and if I don't make it the first year, I'll still be going to BC3, but that's what I have planned.
Wear your crab suit for the audition.
Yeah.
That might influence the judges.
Yeah.
And let me swing that microphone over to Emma there. Emma, same question to you. Have you made plans yet, or are you still kind of up in the air?
So the plans right now are that I will be headed to Waynesburg University in the fall, and I plan to major in communications while I'm there, so electronic media. And I'm looking into doing a theater minor as well as a film studies minor while I'm there.
Well, if you're able to manage your time, you
right.
can still
right.
do a little theater while you're in undergraduate school, mm-hmm. although it gets a little more difficult.
Yeah.
I'll warn you about that. Particulars, Dale Van Lanningham, about the show. It's this coming weekend. How many performances?
Two performances, one Friday, one Saturday, 7:30 curtain at the Butler Senior High Auditorium.
That's good. Early curtain.
Yep.
Get you home early. Yeah,
not bad. Mm-hmm. Tickets are on sale right now at Mays Music Shop. They do a great job for us every year selling those pre-sale. Pre-sale tickets are $10. If you wait and get them at the door, we'll still have tickets, but they'll be $12.
Mm-hmm. If they remain.
Yeah.
Musicals at the Butler High School have long been very, very popular. So.
Yeah. Sales are good so far.
This Friday and Saturday evenings,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. 7:30 curtain if you're interested in seeing the Butler High School production of The Little Mermaid. Featured cast members visiting with us today, Noah Miranda, Emma Hurley, and Noah Mills. Thanks very much for being with us today. I hope we didn't take you out of class.
Uh-huh. Well, you may have, but that's okay.
Just so I was able to convince them.
What's that?
I was able to convince them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just so it wasn't physics or trigonometry or something like that. Although, I don't know about you, pre-med. You don't want to miss anything, baby.
I had a pretty easy day.
You've got a lot of studying ahead of you if you're going to continue in that career path. Well, nice to meet you all. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you.
And break a collective leg.
Thank you.
When the curtain goes up on The Little Mermaid. Dale, thanks for being here again today. Always good to talk with you and the young adults. And thanks for bringing them down today.
Thank you.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, one of our most popular programs year in and year out
It's our Antiques Roadshow on the air. All apologies to PBS. This is on the radio, of course. We'll have guests with us from the Butler Intermediate League in advance of their antiques show and sale coming up this weekend. And this is the be-all and the end-all of antique shows locally. We'll also have with us tomorrow, well, first of all, Judy Nye and Annabelle Brunemer from the Intermediate League. And well-known antiques dealer Ellen King will be here. And she'll be answering any questions you might have about items that you've got around the house that you might think are antiques or might think be a little bit valuable. Ellen can give you a couple of tips on that. It's great fun. It's really great fun to listen to her. So get your questions ready. That'll be straight away at the start of the program tomorrow with the Antiques Roadshow. And then we'll also talk tomorrow with guests from the Junior Women's Club of Butler. Jamie Gehring and Shalyn Kirchie Lang will be with us talking about one of their upcoming fundraisers. So it'll be a good show on the Thursday edition. Thanks for being with us today. We thank our earlier guests, and we had a good conversation with Open Talk today, and certainly speaking with Kathy Emmons is going to be the guest speaker at the Good Friday breakfast at the Butler County Family YMCA this Good Friday. I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Hope to see you tomorrow, 12:30, here on It's Your Turn on WISR 680 in Butler.
This is Butler's hometown radio station, your source for the latest local news.